fall. Shafto jumps out of the airplane. The air is bracingly cold up here, and the wind chill factor is something else. It is the first time in a year that he has not been loathsomely hot and sweaty. Something jerks mightily on his back, the static line still attached to the airplane. God forbid that American fighting men should be entrusted to pull their own ripcords. He could just imagine the staff meeting where they dreamed up the concept of the static line.
For God's sake, General, they're just enlisted men. As soon as they jump out of the airplane, they'll probably start daydreaming about their girlfriends, take a few hits from their pocket flasks, catch 40 winks, and before you know it, they'll all pile into the ground at a couple of 100 miles an hour.
The drogue chute flutters out, catches air, and then eviscerates his main pack in one jerk. There's a bit of flopping and buffeting as Bobby Shafto's body pulls the disorganized cloud of silk downwards. Then it thunks open, and he is left hanging in space, his dark body forming a small, perfect bullseye in the center of the off-white canopy for any Nipponese riflemen down below. No wonder those paratroopers think they are gods among men. They get such a nice view of things. So much better than a poor marine grunt stuck down on the beach, who is always looking uphill into courses of pillboxes. All of Luzon stretches out before him. He can see 100 or 200 miles north, across a mat of vegetation as dense as felt, to the mountains in the far north where General Yamashita, the Lion of Malaya, is holed up with 100,000 troops, each of whom would like nothing better than to strap lots of explosives to his body, sneak through the lines at night, run into the middle of a large concentration of American soldiers, and blow himself up for his emperor. To Shafto's starboard is Manila Bay, and even from this distance, some 30 miles, he can see the jungle suddenly turn thin and brown as it nears the shore, like a severed leaf that is dying from the edge inwards. That would be what's left of the city of Manila. The fat 20-mile-long tongue of land protruding towards him is Bataan. Just off the tip of it is a rocky island shaped like a tadpole with a green head and a bony brown tail. Corregidor. Smoke jets from many vents on the island, which has been mostly reconquered by the Americans. Quite a few Nipponese blew themselves up in their underground bunkers rather than surrender. This heroic act has given someone in the general's chain of command a nifty idea. A couple of miles from Corregidor, motionless on the water, is something that looks like an absurdly squat, asymmetrical battleship, except much bigger. It is encircled by American gunboats and amphibious landing forces. From a source on its lid, a long wisp of red smoke trickles downwind. A smoke bomb dropped out of Shafto's plane a few minutes ago on a parachute. As Shafto descends and the wind blows him directly towards it, he can see the grain of the reinforced concrete of which this prodigy is made. It used to be a dry rock in Manila Bay. The Spanish built a fort there. The Americans built a chain of gun emplacements on top of that, and when the Nips showed up, they turned the entire thing into a solid reinforced concrete fortress with walls 30 feet thick and a couple of double-barreled 14-inch gun turrets on the top. Those guns have long since been silenced. Shafto can see long cracks in their barrels and craters like frozen splashes in the steel. Even though he is parachuting onto the roof of an impregnable Nipponese fortress, chock full of heavily armed men who are desperately looking for a picturesque way to die, Shafto is perfectly safe. Every time a Nip pokes a rifle barrel or a pair of binoculars out of a gun slit, half a dozen American anti-aircraft gunners open up on him at point-blank range from the nearby ships. A tremendous racket ensues as a small powerboat pops out of a little cave along the waterline of the island and heads directly towards an American landing craft. 100 guns open fire on it simultaneously. Supersonic bits of metal crash into the water all around the little boat, ton after ton of them. Each bit makes a splash. All of the splashes combine into a jagged volcanic eruption of white water centered on the little boat. Bobby Shafto puts his fingers in his ears. 2,000 pounds of high explosive, packed into the little boat's nose, detonate. The shock wave flashes across the surface of the water, a powdery white ring expanding with supernatural velocity. It hits Bobby Shafto like a baseball to the bridge of the nose. He neglects to steer his chute for a while and trusts the winds to carry him to the right place. The smoke bomb was dropped as proof of the concept that a man on a parachute might actually be able to land on the roof of this fortress. Bobby Shafto is, of course, the final and irrefutable test of this proposition. As he gets closer and his head clears from the explosion, Shafto sees that the smoke bomb never actually reached the roof. Its little chute got tangled up in the briar patch of antennas growing out of the top of the thing. All kinds of fucking antennas. Even during his days in Shanghai, Shafto had a weird feeling around antennas. Those Station Alpha pencil necks in their little wooden roof shack with all the antennas sprouting from it, those were not soldiers, sailors, or marines in the normal sense. Corregidor was covered with antennas before the Nips came and took it. And everywhere that Shafto went during his detachment 2702 stint, there were antennas. He is going to spend the next few moments concentrating very hard on those antennas, and so he turns his head for a moment to get a bearing on the American LCM, the landing craft that the Nip suicide boat was hoping to destroy. It is exactly where it is supposed to be, halfway between the encircling force of naval ships and the sheer 40-foot-high wall of the fortress. Even if Shafto didn't already know the plan, he would, at a glance, identify this vessel as a landing craft, mechanized, Mark III, a 50-foot-long steel shoebox designed to cuff a medium-sized tank up onto a beach. It has a couple of 50-caliber machine guns on it, which are pounding away dutifully at various targets on the wall of the fortress, which Shafto cannot see. But from his vantage point on high, he can see something that the Nipponese can't. The LCM is not carrying a tank, in the sense of a vehicle on caterpillar treads with a gun turret. It is carrying, rather, a tank in the sense of a large steel container with pipes and hoses and stuff attached to it. The Nips in the fortress are taking pot shots at the approaching LCM, but the only target at which they have to aim is its front door, a piece of metal that can flop down to become a ramp, and which was designed, incredibly enough, on the assumption that doomed Nips would spend a lot of time trying to blow holes in it with various projectile weapons. So the defenders are not getting anywhere. Anti-aircraft gunners on other ships have begun raking the walls of the fortress insanely, making it hard for the Nipponese to poke their heads and their gun barrels out. Shafto notes fragments of antennas skittering and bouncing across the roof of the fortress, and occasional streaks of tracers, and hopes that the men on those ships have the presence of mind to hold their fire before he lands on the fucking thing, which will be in a few seconds. Shafto realizes that his mental concept of what this mission was going to be like, as he reviewed it with the officers in the LCM, bears no relationship to the reality. This is only about the 5,000th time Shafto has experienced this phenomenon in the course of the Second World War. You'd think he would no longer be surprised by it. The antennas, which look wispy and inconsequential on the reconnaissance photos, are in fact sizable engineering works. Or they were, until they got de-engineered by the naval gunfire that silenced those big guns. Now they are just wreckage of a sort that is going to be peculiarly nasty to parachute down on top of. The antennas were, and the wreckage is, made of all kinds of different shit. Spars of Philippine mahogany, sturdy columns of bamboo, welded steel trusses. The most common bits are the ones that catch a parachutist's eye. Long metal pokey things, and miles of guy wire snarled into a briar patch. Some of it taut enough to cut a plummeting marine's head off, and some of it all loose and tangly with sharp hovering ends. It dawns on Shafto that this pile isn't just a gun emplacement. It's a Nip intelligence headquarters.
"Waterhouse, you fucking son of a bitch!"
Shafto hollers. As far as he knows, Waterhouse is still in Europe. But he realizes as he's clapping his hands protectively over his eyes and falling into the nightmare that Waterhouse must have something to do with this. Bobby Shafto is landed. He tries to move, and the wreckage moves with him. He is one with it. He opens his eyes carefully. His head is wrapped up in a snarl of heavy wire, a guy wire that broke under tension and whipped around him. Peering between loops of wire, he sees three lengths of quarter-inch metal tubing projecting out of his torso. Another one has gone through his thigh, and yet another through his upper arm. He's pretty sure he has a broken leg, too. He lies there for a while, listening to the sound of the guns all around him. There is work that needs to be done. All he can think of is the boy. He gropes for the wire cutter with his free hand and begins to cut himself loose from the snarl. The jaws of the wire cutter just barely fit over the metal tubing of the antenna. He reaches behind himself, finds the place where the tubes poke into his back, and cuts them off, snip, snip, snip. He cuts the tube that has impaled his arm. He leans forward and cuts the one that goes through his leg. Then he pulls the tubes out of his flesh and drops them on the concrete. Plink, 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 plink. Lots of blood follows. He doesn't even try to walk. He just begins to drag himself across the concrete roof of the fortress. The sun has warmed the concrete, and it feels good. He cannot see the LCM, but he can see the few antennas that stick out of its top, and he knows it is in position now. The rope should be there. Shafto props himself up on his elbows and looks. Sure enough, there it is. A manila rope, Natch, tied to a grapnel. One point of the grapnel lodged in a shell crater near the edge of the roof. He gets to it eventually and begins to pull on the rope. He closes his eyes, but tries not to fall asleep. He keeps pulling and eventually feels something big and thick between his hands. The hose. Almost finished. Lying on his back, hugging the end of the hose to his chest, he rolls his head from side to side until he can see the air vent that they picked out on the reconnaissance photos. It used to have a sheet metal hood on the top of it, but that's long gone now. It's just a hole in the roof with a few jagged bits of metal at its edges. He crawls over to it and feeds in the end of the hose. Someone must be watching him on one of the ships, because the hose stiffens, like a serpent coming alive. And between his hands, Bobby Shafto can feel the fuel oil streaming through it. 10,000 gallons of the stuff, straight down into the fortress. He can hear the nips down there singing hoarse songs. By now, they will have figured out what is about to happen. General MacArthur is giving them exactly what they've been praying for. At this point, Bobby Shafto is supposed to sail down a rope into the LCM, but he knows it isn't going to happen. No one can reach him now. No one can help him. When the fuel oil stops streaming through the hose, he summons all the concentration he has left. Pretends, one last time, that he actually gives a damn. Jerks the safety pin from a white phosphorus grenade, lets the handle fly off and tinkle merrily across the roof. He can feel it come alive in his hand, the thrumming animal fizz of its inner fuse. He drops it into the air shaft. A circular pipe, straight down, a black disc centered on a field of dingy gray, like the ashes of a Nipponese flag. Then, on an impulse, he dives in there after it. Semper Fidelis, dawn star flares on disk of night, I fall, sun rises.